attempt at podcasting. My name's Josh.
I'm Chris.
And I'm Heisen.
And this is what we do now. We podcast and we talk about what's going on in the world of technology and offer your listening pleasure. Last week, Chris and I were able to talk a lot about a lot of different things, and we kind of scattershot quite a bit.
We did a little bit.
It was fun, though. This week, we are joined by one of our colleagues, Heisen, and he's going to be the resident.
He just waved at everybody, by the way.
He did, yeah. He waved to an
invisible
audience.
And I smiled, also.
He's our resident European
For the
show.
Yeah, we're giving a European opinion.
Exactly. He's got the.
He also doesn't care about the international markets.
It's because of my cruel international markets comment last week that we felt we needed to bring some diversity to the team.
I'm here to convince Josh that Nokia is going to do a great phone with Windows.
He's still hanging on to the to the Nokia Finland market.
Nokia Dream, that's what we call it.
We've got a lot to talk about today. I don't know if we're going to cover everything. And unfortunately, it's going to be... Last week was very RIM heavy.
It was.
We could have just called it the failed attempt at being RIM. We bashed on RIM a lot last week. Sorry, RIM. But this week is going to be very Apple heavy. It's pretty much every day a new story broke about Apple. And the... first of which that we want to talk about is the guys over at thisismynext.com. Some of their sources kind of have a theory of what the next iPhone will look like, and they created a mock-up of it. And so if you check the website, I posted the source to This Is My Next, but looks very different. From the iPhone 4.
Yeah, I actually really like it. I like edge-to-edge screen. They actually will actually get a bigger screen out of the iPhone. I don't know if I like the teardrop design or whatever they're calling that with the beveled edge.
Yeah.
I don't know if I like that as much. But I don't know that you see that they went to that with the iPad where they have the rounded edges, but you don't have the real angle like you have with the iPod Touch.
Right.
But I don't know.
I think it's interesting because it's got no bezel. It's full screen, like just... It's all screen. It's just a mock-up, but it does look beautiful. And the guys at Apple are obviously going to do a great job with the way the phone looks. The teardrop design is very MacBook Air-like. The only problem with that is I don't know how comfortable that will be to hold. The iPhone 4 is a very comfortable phone to hold, and if a phone goes from big to small, I don't know how comfortable that's going to be or how...
It feels really solid right now because of the glass front, the glass back, the metal band. Of course, all the antenna problems they had with the metal band.
Right.
But I don't know, with that mock-up there, are they going to use liquid metal? I mean, they purchased liquid metal, but they haven't had them actually haven't used them for anything other than I think their SIM ejector tool. Mm-hmm. They use liquid metal for that. That's it. So they could actually use liquid metal to mold all of this
and do a unibody.
The T1000 phone.
They should call it that instead of the iPhone, the T1000 phone. That's another thing that we were talking about the other day. Like, they never locked themselves into iPhone 1, iPhone 2, iPhone 3. But now they've locked themselves into kind of this numbering system after the iPhone 4. It's like, so when you make your 28th install of the, or your 28th version of the phone, is it going to be called the iPhone 28? I don't think that Apple should have locked themselves down like that. Call it the iPhone HD or something, because now they're locked into a numbering system.
It is also a marketing strategy. People always want to have the latest.
It's true.
And it's kind of like, oh, which iPhone do you have? I have the 4. Well, I have the 5. Even if they would not have any differences, technology differences, if it would be exactly the same, if Apple comes up...
I have a bigger number than you have.
Yeah, if Apple comes with an iPhone 5 or iPhone 6, people You know, people just
will stand
have
in line
latest.
For days
yeah,
for a bigger was, number.
Well, I mean, I had a 3GS. Chris had a 3G.
I had a 3G.
And you had, what, a Samsung?
I had a Samsung Blackjack.
Yeah. And we waited in line, what, 8-9 hours for the original iPhone 4?
Our iPhone 4s, yeah.
Which I sold a month later, so I mean...
It was a bonding experience.
It was. That was the birth of this website.
It kind of was.
Fail10.com. It was the birth.
Kind of was. You were passed out on the concrete.
I was.
I started out watching movies.
Yeah.
I looked like an Apple fanboy. A couple of things. First, this phone's going to come out in September, is what it's projected to, and a lot of people are asking why. Why not in the summer again? And I think there's a couple of reasons Apple's doing this. One, WWDC has always been a developers conference. It's not been traditionally a hardware keynote. Mm-hmm. It's been about the developers, and the last 4 years it's been dominated by the iPhone, which isn't a bad thing, but it does, you know, it's like, oh, we're developing some really great stuff for Mac or iOS, oh, but here's the bigger news that you want to hear. There's a new iPhone coming out.
Yeah,
they're going to push the iPhone to their fall event, which makes sense. It's going to coincide right with the iPod Touch that they're going to release. It's going to, you know, by that time, I don't know if Lion will be out yet, but it probably, you know, will be close to being released. So they'll talk more about Lion, their new operating system. A bigger reason too is, you know, that's the fall, and they can really capitalize
right on before the holidays,
the holiday season. You know, well, little Timmy, you can get your iPhone 5 if you get good grades in school this semester. You know, and it's going to, instead of having it in the summer, in the middle of summer, where, you know, traditionally a lot of people might not have a lot of money, they can push it to the fall now. It won't affect sales one way or the other. It's an iPhone.
Well, and if there is the dramatic change in iOS that everybody's hoping for, that they can preview some of these things at the traditional WWDC event,
mm-hmm.
and then they can fine-tune and polish everything or
exactly.
get feedback from people, because that's one of the things that they do sometimes is sometimes they'll have an event where they talk about the new iOS
mm-hmm.
and then they release it really soon with a new device and they don't get any feedback. Of course, I don't know how much, you know, they actually listen to consumer feedback.
Right.
I mean, I know they do to an extent, but to actually get some consumer feedback on, like, well, you know, we really think this sucks. I mean, they actually switched the iPad, you know, this iPad screen lock switch,
mm-hmm.
rotation
mm-hmm.
lock. They did that, you know. So they do listen to consumer feedback. I don't know how
yeah,
much they do it, but
it
gives them time.
Yeah.
It gives them time. And then, you know, the other thing is, you know, their iPod sales are going down.
Mm-hmm.
They're being replaced by iPhone sales
yeah,
because
they've replaced their own device.
But, you know, there's what they were down to 8 million, I think, units or something on iPod. So that's, you know, not massive. I mean, there's still massive sales. It's not a huge decline, but I think they're going to do... still going to continue to do really well in the iPod market because they don't have no competitors. I mean, Zune's
yeah.
killed, so...
Zune, yeah. Oh.
So they have no competitors, but I think another reason for the delay is the earthquake in Japan.
Yeah.
Is Samsung, their, you know, number one supplier for all their memory components.
Right.
And, their production was stopped for a couple of weeks and
mm-hmm.
is still slow. I mean, because
mm-hmm.
every day they have to shut down a plant every time there's an aftershock.
Exactly.
And there's been, you know, one of those every 10 minutes, I think, since the original earthquake.
Oh, my gosh.
So, I mean, you know, for the first few days it was, and then there have been several subsequent, you know, smaller earthquakes
mm-hmm.
since then. So they have to shut down the plant every single time that happens.
So do you think the iPad also reduced the sales for the, like, MacBook Air and all the Apple laptops?
Yeah,
because
I think it did.
Technically,
according
you know.
To their earnings report, or their earnings estimates, they posted 113% profit from over, you know, last quarter, and they're actually, their Mac line of products is actually doing very well. They're going to end up, you know, treading the fine line between you need the iPad, oh, but also still buy our laptop.
And I think that's why we're not seeing the iPad go to like an actual laptop replacement.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because they could do that with iOS 5. As soon as you buy an iPad
mm-hmm.
or an iPhone or anything, you don't have to pair it up to a PC
right.
or
yeah.
a Mac.
Make it work.
Or one of their devices before you can actually use it.
The thing about their design change too is, I don't know, a lot of people are like, well, the iPhone 4 is beautiful. And a lot of, like, Engadget, I posted a link in the article I wrote this morning, how Engadget had estimated earlier that all the iPhone 5 was going to get was the A5 processor and maybe a memory boost, and that was going to be it. It was going to say be the same design, which people were like, the iPhone 4 was beautiful. Beauty aside, which we all know the iPhone 4 is a really, really, really pretty phone, it's a terrible design. Because every time I had made a call on my iPhone 4, I would drop...
You're holding it wrong.
Yeah, oh, okay.
There's an art that you actually develop.
Yeah,
see? After like 6 months with the phone, you have this weird like claw type
That's not how a phone should be held, and I think Apple would never admit to it, but they're like, look, it was a beautiful phone. We've got to cut our losses and go with a new design, move the antenna up to the top or whatever. I got a buddy, Matt, who every time I'm on the phone with him, he drops a call. Because I've been using a cell phone, you know, since I was 12, and it's, maybe not 12, but you get used to holding it a certain way. And when a company says, well, you're holding it wrong, it's like, well, really? I've been holding it this way for, you know, almost 10 years.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
So you should have gotten a Nokia. You can hold it any way you want. And it would have a sound.
Well, they're going to have to change the antenna design anyway. Because if they go with an LTE.
Right.
And, you know, really they need to go to a tri-band or, you know, tri-mode phone, mm-hmm. where you can do CDMA, you can do GSM, and you can do LTE,
right.
So they can have either one modem or two modems, whatever, you know, chipset they decide to go with, to be able to build one phone for AT&T and Verizon,
right.
And just stick a different SIM in there, and off you go.
Yeah,
so that's the only problem with mobile companies like AT&T, that they don't want that.
Yeah,
once you buy a phone from a certain provider, they want you to be stuck with them forever and never.
Yeah, because if you had a phone that would be able, that could handle all that, then you'd be able to unlock it and take it over to Verizon.
I cannot go. I will have a trip to Europe here next month, and I won't be able to use my phone over there.
Yeah.
Even though I think I should be able.
Without paying ridiculous
SIM and just
overseas rates.
Yeah. It's a ridiculous
At least you can change the SIM on your AT&T iPhone. You can't even do that with a CDMA version because it's CDMA. There is no SIM, so it's not even technically a world phone.
We'll have to unlock it.
Yeah.
You know.
Which, of course, they don't
You know, they don't want that. They're saying it's illegal. So I will just use it as a camera, just to take pictures.
A $500 camera.
Yeah.
The last thing about the design, again, you kind of have to see it. It's hard to just talk about it, but
it's very thin at the bottom.
It looks extremely thin on the bottom. It looks, you know,
from
obviously
the
it's
side
just a prototype.
Like a pen.
It's probably going to still have a glass design. They may go back to the original iPhone and put an aluminum back to it.
I'm hoping they don't. I would like to see them actually use liquid metal for something. I like, and one of the things I noticed at the bottom on the button, mm-hmm. the home button, mm-hmm. is it looks like it may be a gesture area.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's just mock-up or if that's actual rumor that they've heard, is that's going to be a gesture area.
That's a...
like a capacitive gesture area. Because we were talking about that a little bit last week where
we did.
Having a capacitive button is kind of a pain because you hit it sometimes or you don't intend to or whatever. And to have, if you had a gesture area where it wasn't just like, you tap it, but you would swipe. Like you swipe left or right, and that'll take, or you swipe down, and it'll take you home, or
right.
you something like that would be.
Or
awesome.
Even, I mean, if it is capacitive, you could just touch the home button and then swipe left on the home button, unlock your phone.
Yeah.
I mean,
at least pressure sensitive, maybe.
Right.
Like it wouldn't have to be a button, but pressure sensitive, because they talked about doing that in a lot of screens, where they do pressure sensitivity, or and they could use. I could actually use the gyroscope for that, because in the iPad 2, they're using the gyroscope in the iPad 2 in. GarageBand.
Oh, really?
So if you tap a key on the piano, it'll play that note louder if the harder you hit it. They could actually use the gyroscope in that, so if you it can actually tell when you're tapping it or when you intend to tap it.
Right.
Which would be really nice.
The multi-gesture thing has been around for a while. There's actually multi-gesture software built into iOS 4.3, but yeah. Apple withheld it. It looks amazing. It's like you swipe.
Yeah, I don't know if I'd want like four or five fingers on my screen because that gets crowded. But I mean, if you had a gesture area where like you hold down on the left, just to the left of the home button, and then you can do gestures on the screen. If you're holding in that area, then the gestures that you do are in that application. If you hold on the right side of the home button, then the gestures are within the app. If you hold on the home button, then you can pull down a dashboard type thing. There's a lot of things I could do with that, with the gesture area.
I think there's a cool philosophy, though, in the iOS software, like swiping four fingers to the right will switch apps, or you know, just taking all five fingers and bringing them into the
inside. Makes more sense on the iPad than it does on the iPhone.
Right,
I think,
on the iPhone, the execution wouldn't be there just because you're only getting a 3.7-inch screen now is what's rumored. For the iPhone 5, why not a 4-inch screen when most carriers and most phone makers now offer a 4-inch device? Josh wrote a really interesting reason as to why they're doing that. One of the big selling points for the iPhone 4 is the Retina display.
Yeah.
The beautiful Retina display that you cannot see any pixels on. Well, if you raise the screen size up to 4 inches, you don't get as many pixels per inch, and Apple's not gonna sell something that feels like it's going backwards.
Right.
At 3.7 inches, they can still get, I think it's what, 313 PPI. So that's still technically a Retina display. Whereas at 4 inches, you would actually be able to see the pixels, and Apple doesn't want that. I had a friend ask yesterday, why is it so hard to make a Retina display bigger? And that was one of the things that was rumored on the iPad too, was a Retina display.
Yeah.
But you have to think of it. Yes, it's, you know, the iPad's what, 1024 by 768?
Yeah.
Well, you're in effect doubling the resolution with a Retina display so that you can't see any pixels. I mean,
and you want your GPU to be able to handle that and still be able to say, oh, we have three times the graphics performance.
Right. And I mean, that's ungodly. I mean, you're talking about almost 2048 by 1600 at that point on a 10-inch screen. I mean, that's ridiculous.
It would look really nice,
which would
though.
Look so awesome. Mm-hmm. But I mean, that's just, I don't think it's, it will eventually come, and it will you know, it'll be a huge deal when it does happen, but I just don't think that right now, like Chris was saying, the graphics processor can't handle it. It's too much for the GPU. Other than that, 8-megapixel camera on the back and a new processor as well. The 8-megapixel camera, I mean, okay. I guess if you're for your European trip, there you go.
My European trip, there my $500 camera. Are they going on with the NFC chip, the near field communication, or you can,
I've heard rumors that they...
I've heard they are.
They were hiring, but I heard it's not going to be on this phone, which puts them behind Google in that market.
Yeah, because Google's starting to roll it out everywhere.
Yeah, Google's Gingerbread supports it, and you know, any carrier, or I'm sorry, any manufacturer can say, yeah, let's throw an NFC chip in there. I don't think Apple has figured out what they want to do with it. Okay. Of course, when they do announce it, they'll make it sound like they are the first phone to ever have it. And so but it was Google, I just imagine Steve up there, and you know, Google, they came out with this thing, NFC, but they didn't do it right.
Yeah.
And we figured a way to do it better. Well, what? It's NFC. It's
yeah, it's just,
how can you do that more right? And so
then you got to bring up the Australian guy.
What we've done here with the NFC chip is
He's British, by the way.
Hey.
We need to edit a montage
another continent.
From every iPhone that has come out. And just get the video clips of him talking about how it's such a revolutionary device, but for every phone, so every single phone is the same revolutionary device.
Yeah. If I were to say any one last thing about the design of the iPhone 5, is if instead of that the teardrop, you know, bezel design, where they, you know, have that real thin edge with like they have on the MacBook Air, just make it the same thickness at the top as the bottom, and put in wireless charging.
They won't. I don't see them doing that.
Just to be able to, because if you have wireless syncing, if they can do that in iOS 5, which we hope they do.
Yes, crossing our fingers.
That make it the same thickness throughout and just drop in wireless. Even if they don't make it any thinner than the current iPhone 4.
It's amazing to me that Palm had the Touchstone, which was a wireless charging device.
So long
ago. And no one else said, that's a cool idea. You'd think that'd be one of the first things that Apple would have wanted to. And they and then HP's new touchpad's going to be Touchstone capable. So it's going to be interesting for sure. I mean, obviously the first thing that we have to get through is WWDC, and we have to see what iOS 5 is going to look like. Hopefully drastically different from iOS 4. And I think we talked about that last week, how there's so many changes that they would be so simple. Next up, as far as Apple's concerned, they have filed a lawsuit against one of their biggest partners. Samsung. I heard.
Or one of the divisions of one of their. The mobile division of their biggest partner.
What does Samsung make for them? Do we know?
What
does Samsung?
Samsung makes
inside the iPhone.
I know that they're making. Memory. I don't know if they're making the RAM chipset, if they're making the flash storage, or if they're making both. Maybe they could be. They may be making both. I don't have a list of all those things actually.
It's one of the Apple's obviously one of Samsung's biggest clients, and according to the sales call that Tim Cook made, they had asked Apple. Or I'm sorry, they had asked Samsung to stop making kerf devices of the iPhone. For a very long time. In case you don't know what kerf means, it's keeping it real fake. It's a fake device. they've asked Samsung to stop, and Samsung said no. And so, you know, what happens in that case with two companies, you have to take them to court. I am not a legal expert. I don't think Heisen's a legal expert, at least in American law. and Tim's there, I'm
Unfortunately
sorry.
Unfortunately not.
Chris isn't either, but the gist of the lawsuit is not so much patent infringement. Apple's taken HTC, they've taken Google, they've taken a number of different companies to court over patent infringements, things like that show up in Android that were also in the iPhone first or in iOS first. This is a mainly a trade dress violation that Samsung's done. And what trade dress is basically dressing up a Samsung Galaxy S series phone to look as much like an iPhone as possible to mislead people so that they'll think that a Galaxy S Samsung is an iPhone.
They're selling Apple's user experience is what they're trying to do with a different bit of piece of software.
Right. And it's like, I would never mistake a Samsung phone for an iPhone. Well, there are people that will. Yeah. And if that hurts Apple's business, then it is illegal. I've heard everything from the Galaxy S series, everything down to even the box design, how it's all, you know, how Apple, you just open it up and the phone is right there, and there's only, like, even Samsung copied the box from Apple. And so what does this mean? Well, they're going to spend millions of dollars on a case is what it means. Does it hurt their professional relationship? I honestly don't think that it does. Samsung's going to get money from Apple anyways. I mean, they're not. It's not like Samsung's going to say, well, we're going to cut this multi-million dollar, possibly billion dollar contract out because you're suing us. No.
Yeah.
Samsung's not stupid.
Yeah,
Apple's
it's multi-billion. And they'll end up settling and you know, trading some patents back and forth. And, I mean, they may be required to change some of their TouchWiz interface over an OTA update and change the packaging that, I mean, because the Galaxy S packaging is identical down to the little tray that you pull the phone out of. The contents underneath is identical.
Wow!
I just pulled a picture up here, and it's identical to an iPhone packaging. So
the most compelling argument that Apple has in this case, of course, there's trade dress clauses, and there's even the design of the Samsung phones even looks similar. The Galaxy S series looks similar to an iPhone. But the most compelling argument Apple has is in the icons that TouchWiz specifically uses. Now, icons, Apple's, you know, taken, like I said, Google and HTC to court before over icons. But basically the court just said, well, they're different enough. Well, TouchWiz is not coy one bit in how it tries to mimic. I've even read if you're planning on switching from iOS to Android, get a Samsung device because TouchWiz is so iPhone friendly.
Yeah.
That's a big problem. If you go to the source link on the article that I posted on Wednesday or Thursday about the lawsuit, there's a comparison of icons in iOS and icons in Android. The first is the phone dialer. It's exactly the same.
Yeah.
Why does TouchWiz have to have a phone with a green background? Why couldn't it be a blue background? And that really, they could have saved themselves this headache had they just changed the color from green to blue.
And I mean, their media player interfaces, I mean, their video player interface, it looks very, very, very similar.
The two biggest...
They copied the icons, though, in a really cheap way. Because if you look at their, if you look at an iOS icon, it looks... I mean, it looks nice. The gradients are really nice. Mm-hmm. It's kind of glossy. It's got a little bit of dimensionality to it, but not a, they're really nice and fluid. And if you look at some of the TouchWiz, I mean, when they're blown up, they look all right. When they're on the device, they just look really square and clunky, but they're very similar to the iOS. So they copied them, but they copied them in a cheap way, and they look like a kerf device.
Yeah. The biggest kind of violator of this would be Samsung's awful music player icon. There really is no excuse for it, because it is the iTunes logo. It is a CD with a musical note in front of it. That is the iTunes logo. That is where Apple's got its biggest leg up in this case, because that icon is a straight ripoff of iTunes, and that does mislead people. And like you're saying, they're not buying an iPhone, they're buying a kerf device. And I heard it this week, Samsung is the biggest and best kerf manufacturer that there is, and you know, if they keep this up and they don't try to design something new, that doesn't help Samsung or the market. They need to create something new and something exciting, like HTC does with Sense and Sensation, their new Android skin, which looks really great. And you know, or just adopt what LG does. LG just released a phone with stock Android. You know, either adopt a stock user interface or create something new that isn't such a blatant ripoff of Apple. However, which this was obvious, Samsung is going to countersue Apple, and they have countersued
Apple.
They have,
and I don't know if they've countersued in the United States, countersued in Korea, Germany, a couple of other countries. They haven't filed anything in the U.S. yet. But the thing is, with Samsung's countersuit, they're suing on technology infringements for things like power management during 3G wireless transmissions. Things like they're going to be pretty difficult for them to prove that they were the source of the code, or they were the ones that actually originated this device, especially with them selling components to Apple.
Right.
Like Apple's licensing and has a contract with them to purchase components, and you have to use, to some extent, some of, you know, the interfaces for their components. And,
right.
I mean, I know they're not using... I mean, they're mainly using memory and some other things, but it's going to be hard for them to prove that they're actually using Samsung's power management code or any other technology like that. And I think with Apple suing Samsung, they're actually suing for something that's easy to verify and is, I mean, something tangible that you can, like, oh, I can hold a Samsung phone in my hand and an iPhone in my hand, and oh, those look pretty close, and I can pull up the icons and I can swipe menu to menu, and these look pretty similar,
right.
And that's something visually that's really easy
to prove,
whereas, you know, well, we're suing for some of the back-end things that they're in. I don't know how well that's going to fly. I think Apple's legal team is, you know, like ninjas in suits.
Right. However, they did mess up when they filed the claim, because they used two copyrighted pictures that they didn't ask permission to use.
Yeah.
So ninjas in suits that still make human error, I guess.
Yeah. They're being dispatched from Jason Chen's house.
They are.
directly to Korea.
They've got Jason Chen on watch 24/7. The last Apple story of the week. We hope for the week. We hope for a while.
It's not going to be.
It's not
going to
be. I know. They're going to find news to break themselves.
This is a very good marketing for them. I mean, it's either something good happening about Apple or something bad.
It doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter if it's bad.
All press is good press for them.
Yeah, if it's bad, it still just like rolls right off their back, and it's like nothing ever happened.
Well, speaking of bad press that should be taken as bad press, there was a group from the UK this week that found a hidden file inside of iOS 4 that decided to see exactly what it was. And they found out that the iPhone had been keeping basically logs of user data from tower to tower and Wi-Fi hotspot to Wi-Fi hotspot. And had just been keeping it on the phone in a file called consolidated.db.
And that file was every time you back up or you sync to your computer, that file is backed up on your machine. So Heisen's safe because he hasn't synced his iPhone to his computer
in years.
Probably a year since
until they since come
he
up
got
with
it.
Syncing wirelessly.
Until they come up with wireless. Because every time you plug in your iPhone to sync, it completely wipes out your iPhone and
sends
it to a new
iTunes,
iPhone.
iTunes is a terrible software. That's the worst thing that ever happened to humans since World War I and World War II. And then it's iTunes. Seriously.
But for everybody that does actually sync their iPhones or can physically, make sure you're encrypting your backups.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you don't encrypt your backups, then this file is just sitting on your workstation completely unencrypted. And if you have a Mac, there's actually an application that you can run that will go find the data and actually map that on your machine, and you can just watch as you travel where all you've been. I want somebody to write that. I don't want to take the time.
Yeah.
It'd be way too difficult.
Exactly.
Yeah,
I want somebody
to
write that
mine.
for Windows, because we all have Windows PCs. We don't have Macs.
We aren't in the cool Mac club yet.
Yeah, we want to be able to see that.
If Apple would like to send us some review units, we'd be glad to.
Yeah, we'll review their new we'll review their new stuff, their new TV.
I think that might hurt our deal with Ogden though.
Yeah.
What is this file? What is it doing? Well, it's basically cell tower tracking, and it's not a bad thing. It's just logging towers that you're near for future use. That's not a bad thing. The problem is they cache it.
They're caching it for way too long.
There's never been an expiration. It's not like, oh, whenever they perform a backup, we'll wipe the log, or whenever their phone dies, we'll wipe the log. It's always there.
I mean, if it's there to improve service, and I mean, I understand that. Well, I say I understand that they need to make money. I mean, they're making money. They're making more money than anybody right now. But I don't think that. I mean, they're using it for ad deployment.
Right.
They're using it for improving service. But I don't think they need to be keeping it for. And it could just be a bug that's been kind of rumor, or maybe that's just CYA on their part. Like, oh, well, that's clearly just a bug.
Yeah.
We're not tracking you.
I don't think that it's a bug. I think that it's because Android has been doing this for a long time.
Yeah.
And Windows Phone 7 even does it. The problem is Android and Windows Phone 7 wipe that log. I think Android only keeps a log of 200 most current, and Windows Phone only keeps, you know, even less than that.
Imagine if Glenn Beck was on the air right now.
Oh,
gosh. Like he still had a show.
This would be...
He would be...
This is the socialist media coming after you.
Yeah.
He would be camped outside of Steve Jobs' house.
Well, I mean, that's what I'm saying. It doesn't really look very like it was put with like
malicious intent.
Intent to do something, because there's other ways they can track you. Obviously, we all know that. You know, a file just keeps a log where you've been. You know, people can track you real time.
Mm-hmm.
You know. There's other ways out there, and at least I like to believe that it's, you know, just a bug that on the iPhone 5 will probably be fixed.
No, I think they'll get it a lot sooner than that, because of the PR. They'll have
an iOS
patch.
Update.
Yeah.
Soon.
Well, actually, there was an iTunes update the other day.
I downloaded an iTunes update on Friday,
but I didn't read the release notes on it.
See, this issue, I don't think would be actually as big in Europe. You know. If somebody keeps saying, okay, well, I go to you know, 5 miles that way to work and 5 miles this way home. However, U.S. has always, you know, been sensitive when it comes to tracking people.
Privacy.
Or just in privacy. U.S. is always very sensitive. So they will work really quick to fix it.
What Chris was saying is if you don't encrypt the backup, it's just there. So, and, okay, so why do I care? It's just tracking basically cell tower data. Well, it's also tracking GPS data and even more specifically compass data.
Yeah.
Which Google Maps opens the compass app. So if, let's say, you have a creepy stalker person who just decides to take consolidated.db, they can triangulate exactly where you were. And that is scary, and that does need to be fixed. And so, and there's fixes in, on every source that I posted. There's easy fixes to this stuff. Basically, just encrypt your iPhone backup, and also
because I mean, you can get a lot of information from that. I mean, you definitely figure out where somebody lives.
Exactly.
Because you'll have, you know, the most coordinates, or the, you know, unless you live at work, which, you know, I generally do.
Exactly. But even then,
but
somebody can see where
you
work.
But it does not tell you the time or date or.
I don't know. I haven't looked.
Because the way I looked, one, it basically just it just shows kind of like where you've been, but
I think it just
no
stores
date. Yeah,
latitude, longitude,
yes,
that kind of information.
It's kind of like you've been in kind of this area around, you know.
Well, I think it's more specific. I think the app that they released that actually aggregates all of that and plots it, they purposefully made it more generic when it plots it. To scare people less, I think. But when they actually talked about it, because they did it was an O'Reilly media interview, and they posted that up on YouTube, and I think you have that in your source.
I do.
On that article. But they were talking about, you know, how they found it, because these guys were just plotting data, and they were just finding, you know, looking through different devices and different things to figure out, oh, what's some cool new data that we could plot? And we like plotting data. We like charts and graphs and maps. So
it's a new type of nerd.
It is. It is. So, like, they found that file, and then it was called, what was it called? Map something? Map? I can't remember.
I can't remember what it is either.
I can't remember what the table inside that file was called. But, yeah, they, you know, they found that, and plotted it out, and like, oh, well, this is very specific. Like,
I'm sure that they too, they can write into the app that they wrote. I'm sure they could build a timeline into it.
I'm sure they could.
And because one of the guys, you know, he saw an exactly plotted trip from Washington D.C. all the way to New York, and the data wasn't as fluent on the way back, but he'd already had all that cell tower information cached, so Apple maybe didn't need it. Or the phone didn't need it, I should say, to check the cell tower. But I'm sure they could write, you know, a timestamp into that and then track, you know, exactly where you are at a time of day. But encrypt your backups. I know most people that are going to listen to this are going to say, I don't want to do anything else. Well, encrypt your backups. There's also a way to delete the file.
Yeah.
It requires a little trickery, though.
The way I saw it, it was like if you take a picture with your phone,
yeah,
and
it does.
And you go to places and kind of shows the places you've been, you've taken pictures.
Yeah, and they've been doing geotagging in their photos for a long time.
Mm-hmm. So, you know,
but I think this is like a regular interval. Like every time you ping a new tower, like you transition towers, it keeps a log of that.
Mm-hmm.
And like, I wouldn't be opposed to sending that to AT&T with my signal strength when that happens. Like, hey, I switched 47 towers in 3 minutes, and my signal strength went from 5 bars to 0 bars.
Mm-hmm.
Like, send that to AT&T and say, fix this, and, you know.
And if it's getting sent to Apple, like, what could Apple possibly need with this information unless they plan on
sending it to
AT&T and
say, but I don't think it's being sent. I think it's just stored on the phone.
It's just stored on your phone.
There's no evidence of that yet, but.
So, make sure to encrypt, folks. It's important.
Or don't sync.
Or don't sync like Heisen does.
There's an update. I don't need it.
But, yeah, I don't know. I don't think anybody else is, I mean, doing this as extensively as this one file is. And I think it's for other purposes. And, I mean, that's the best solution is, I mean, if you're worried about it on your iPhone, just make sure your backups are encrypted until, you know, you see the release notes for this being removed or this bug being fixed.
Right.
But I don't think any of that's being stored anywhere. Talking about things being stored in places.
and things
Amazon,
need to be fixed.
And that needs to be fixed. Amazon's cloud services, web services, crashed recently. And I guess we're talking about last week about how people are relying heavily on the cloud. Mm-hmm. Amazon, I guess, is got into this market. Well, how long ago did they get into this? Were it like a year, two years ago?
Yeah,
maybe
they
3 years ago.
They're far ahead of the curve than further ahead than Google and Apple were.
They're really low key on it. I mean, you hear about it, and people who are familiar with, you know, like technology are familiar with that, but the general public doesn't know. Like, oh, all these websites that are hosted, they're not, you know, just hosted like all these little small hosting companies that mm-hmm. had popped up all over the place. Amazon, huge data centers and huge, you know, warehouses full of data, and they're hosting all of this stuff. And, you know, Dropbox, I think, uses Amazon.
Amazon's cloud service.
Amazon's cloud service. I mean, things like that, you think, you know, there's massive amounts of data out there.
Mm-hmm.
When that crashes, like, you know, large portions of the internet goes down.
Yeah.
Foursquare was one of them. I don't use it.
Nice.
There were several other things that went down, but you know, just a little
Facebook places, you know, killed Foursquare effectively.
Yeah, it did. It did. And I mean, there's, you know, lots of things that went down as a result of that. So I mean, that's just, you know, good to know that. That's a big service that,
yeah,
you know, needs to be redundant in more places, I think, because they have. With Apple buying their huge warehouse in
North Carolina,
and the rumors that they're going to have a Mobile Me, and I keep going to Apple today. We did last week. We had RIM.
It's
this
just
week
all
is
Apple today.
Everywhere,
you know. Yeah. Maybe one of these days I'll get my dream, and it'll be
We're
all Microsoft.
We're all Augin next week.
All Augin.
Take
you
notes.
Heard it.
but yeah, you know,
mobile.
That could be a problem with if things start going to the cloud and synchronizing everything everywhere, that if it relies on a single massive data center without a rollover, or, you know, large portions of it
mm-hmm.
are not redundant somewhere else, then things are going to go down.
That's
with Amazon going down like that.
That's what I was going to say, is that if they don't, I think that Apple needs to learn from this, and you know, of course they're going to say they're going to improve on it so stuff like this doesn't happen, but you know, Apple's about to move a lot of stuff to the cloud. Is the mindset.
Yeah.
They didn't buy that data center for nothing. And so...
And Microsoft's already starting to do that with Azure and Mesh and all the things that Microsoft's doing with...
Well, and with their marketing strategy now to the cloud.
Yeah. The idea is very good. The idea is very good for the cloud. I mean, you shouldn't... If you buy a software anymore, you shouldn't carry a CD or a DVD mm-hmm. with you anymore.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know? Everything, all that. I just hope they implement it really right instead of because I don't know about you guys, but you know, you see a lot of stuff now if you surf through the web, cloud this, cloud that,
mm-hmm.
and sometimes you look at it and it does not even have to do anything with the cloud. You know, it just.
I was literally at a conference year before last,
mm-hmm.
and they were talking. It was an education technology conference. And there were administrators from all these large universities around there, and they were all, you know, they were all talking about, oh, cloud services, oh, that's new, that's exciting. And, well, not really. I mean, you've been doing it forever. I mean, you just don't realize it. It's the same thing you've always been doing. It's just, you know, it's talked about now.
Right.
And, I mean, it's some things are, you know, happening more, like Google Docs and Word Online and
yeah.
things like that.
Well, Amazon's music
service. Amazon's music service. Video service now, you
right.
can stream. But, things that are happening more online now because of bandwidth increases and increases in compression qualities and things like that for files and videos and
mm-hmm.
music and everything. But there was somebody that said, well, we should do this with the cloud, or we should do that with the cloud. And some guy's like, well, we're already doing stuff with the cloud. And, well, if you're talking about the cloud, define the cloud. What's the cloud? And like, isn't, well, I guess FedEx is the cloud, because you just want to send something to somebody and you just give it to FedEx and they get it there. That's how the cloud works. That's people's concept sometimes of the cloud. Like, that was not even a joke. They literally said, well, hey, FedEx is the cloud, right? You know,
let the robots do it.
that's people's, you know, mindset sometimes. Like, that's how the cloud works, right? Not really.
It's taking Apple longer. A lot of people think they're trying to get their cloud services. They're trying to get the industry, of course, being the music industry and the television and film industry, on board with streaming to multiple devices. Apple's already doing it with Apple TV. It's just kind of, you can stream a show from your iPad to your Apple TV, but that's not, that's obviously not the cloud. What they would like is for, you know, a completely continuous, I guess, user experience from device to device on the cloud. They're trying to get the industry involved. Not going so well right now, but I think the industry is going to be more likely to lean towards Apple, because we were talking about Amazon's music service in the cloud. Amazon just did it. And as for permission, they just said, let's just throw our music services in the cloud, and companies didn't like that. So yeah. Apple's got you know, a lot of things that they can learn from this.
A lot of the same problems that Apple had with iTunes
when they first
launched it.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah,
they can learn a lot from this with the whole, you know, with it actually, the service is actually crashing, to the way Amazon handled themselves. You know, Amazon got the leg up, but, you know, hopefully they won't, this kind of won't be the downfall of Amazon's services, you know.
I don't think it'll affect them too much. But, yeah, speaking of the client and the continuous user experience, mm-hmm. we talked last week about the continuous client.
Mm-hmm.
And after we talked about the continuous client on the podcast,
Paul Miller.
On This Is My Next, made a post about the continuous client, why we need it, here's everything that it needs to be, and wanted to form a continuous client coalition.
Yep.
So I emailed him. I'm actually on the continuous client coalition now. It's 16 members right now.
Nice.
It's the people with ideas, developers. I think like 80% of us are from the Dallas area.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So. The introductions list was, I'm from the Dallas area, I used to be in the Dallas area.
Nice.
And one person said, I'm
not from Texas. I think that'll be good to have like a group, whether it becomes a group that develops something that can perform those kind of functions on a set of devices. It's going to be really hard to get a group of people to do something cross-platform for everything, but I think even if it becomes something that, say, we want a Mac and an iPad and an iPhone to all be a continuous client, or we want a PC and an Android tablet and an Android phone to be a continuous, if we can pick one thing and just develop the concept, the proof of concept that, like, hey, you can do this with just some simple software layers and some hooks with some different software, or just, even if, go ahead.
Or just explain the need.
Yeah,
or,
and
you know.
Yeah, to have the need, and if we can get, you know, like some mock-ups and some, you know, some ideas and simple strategy to, like, you know, we talked about HP, how they're doing it, and they're going to start rolling out WebOS to desktops.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, HP is a huge PC seller.
Mm-hmm.
And if they roll out WebOS to desktop, of course, I don't know if that's going to be like, you know, at boot up, you select WebOS or Windows.
Right.
Or I've heard that it's going to be more like you're in Windows and you open WebOS and you get a windowed WebOS.
Like an emulator.
An emulator, basically.
Microsoft might not like that.
And, yeah, I don't think they're going to really fight them too much on that, because, I mean, they're a huge partner right now.
Mm-hmm.
But, and they have been a huge partner forever. I mean, they kept Windows Mobile alive.
Yeah.
I mean, that's... But they've been a huge desktop partner too, and I don't know, I don't know how well that's going to work if it's just another layer, because it needs to be a more integrated experience. Even if it's, you know, software running on there, but it integrates with the user experience across all your devices. So if you're familiar with user experience here, you may have a little bit different user experience on your iPad, clearly, as you would on your Windows 7 PC.
Mm-hmm.
But if the user experience of the continuous client is similar, where you can have little hooks in the API for simple things, browser, an add-on in a browser that synchronizes to the cloud and keeps your session state active,
right.
Where you can open up the browser on your phone, and it, you know, you can say, oh, I want to view the tabs in my cloud client or just tabs on my phone. So if you're on your phone and you're on your computer, you can be browsing different things.
Right.
Or you can see this exact same thing and continue your session across all your devices. And I think one of the things that I brought up was the first thing that needs to be tackled is when you walk up to your machine, say you're out in your car, you're driving home from work, you've got a tablet, you've got a phone. Your phone and your tablet are always paired with one another.
Yeah,
whether it's over Bluetooth when they're close to each other, or it's over the 3G or LTE or Wi-Fi, wherever, you know, whatever is the most power efficient, wherever they can actually communicate with each other, because not all Wi-Fi can devices communicate with each other. And then when you get to your home, you walk up to your home PC, you're always paired over 3G or Wi-Fi, then say Bluetooth is the most power efficient, so then it switches to a Bluetooth pairing.
Yeah.
So either you're always paired, you get a text message, it can pop up on all three of your devices, you can reply from all three devices, text message, MMS, all of those things, and they'll all synchronize. And just a few things like messaging, simple messaging, it doesn't have to be anything huge.
It doesn't have to be group MMS or photo messages or anything like that.
And we mentioned that I mentioned in a couple of posts that I did in the group that there are already services. We talked last week about the Firefox Home, how that actually synchronizes some of your bookmarks and some things that it does that it can do well, but the implementation that I've seen of it hasn't been great.
Right.
It's been okay with Firefox Sync and using Firefox Home on your iOS device or whatever, but Dropbox is great because it has a tick in there where it'll do LAN syncing when available. So if you're on the LAN, then it'll sync over the LAN and you're not using data, like we talked about data caps last week. You can't all be cloud. Yeah. It has to be an auto detect hybrid.
If it's a similar device, like a touchpad and a Pre or an iPad and iPhone, this is so amazing and I know I said this last week, so I won't reiterate or rehash it that much, but it's just so amazing to me that Apple has not done this or figured this out yet.
Yeah.
It just needs to be through Bluetooth because, like you said, it can't always be through the cloud. That's going to eat up battery life for one.
Yeah.
And it's just a simple little Bluetooth connection or. And then there's apps. I was talking to them about this with somebody, an instructor at the college, and he's like, well, the iPhone already does that. You can share contacts. It's like, well, there's an app that does the same thing. It's called Bump.
Yeah.
That is basically the same, the same kind of concept, but it, the iPhone, the iPad, the HP Touch Smart, the HP Pre 3, good God, that's hard to say, they all need to have this functionality and be, I don't know how they implement it, but
well, and if you've ever used like WebEx on, and I haven't tried this yet, but WebEx on your iPhone is supposed to have a feature where you can be on your WebEx session on your iPhone, you can sit down at your computer, and you can flick your phone at your PC, and your WebEx session will pop up on your PC. Now I'm sure that's a client running on the machine; they're either paired over Wi-Fi or something like that, or they're you're just logged in. Say you're logged into your email address in WebEx, and you're logged into your email address in the client, whenever you flick your phone, it'll go, oh, flick it to here if you're logged in there, or you're logged, you sign into your machine.
Right.
That kind of thing, that makes it easier to do application-wise, and application-wise needs to be the first thing that's done, where everything's paired, everything's synced, and you can do some simple things like the browser state, messaging, and some simple file sharing. And then it needs to be integrated into the OS. So if what would be awesome with this group is if the group can either come up with some mock-ups, some people that we have some developers in the group, they can come up with some simple code and we can play with some things, or even if it just becomes an advisory group, like we nail it and we can find the best way to do it and we become an advisory group to somebody,
right?
To any company that wants wants a good user experience, like, hey, Google, they've got some smart people over at Google, but Google doesn't always, clearly they haven't always had the best user experience.
Yeah.
And if they have a group of people who are in the community for technology and they're also, consumers as well, we're the people that use these things every day, and we can say, this is what the consumer really needs and this is the best way to implement it, then, hopefully they'll take that to heart that,
Google did a very good job with the synergy, that you can basically use one keyboard on multiple computers. That was a...
Synergy, yeah.
That's
synergy, because you've got that set up at work where you've got your Linux box and your PC. You pop up Synergy on your Linux box and on your... Windows desktop, and you can just back and forth.
I don't have to have multiple keyboards there, and just.
And that's just over wired networking, wireless networking. Same kind of thing could be done instead of sharing interface. Really awesome if you could share an interface. Like, oh, I want my iPad to be a Wacom tablet. type device now and just pop
this
right over
what,
there.
That's what I always thought, you know, Apple could do, like make the iPad if you want to make it like an extended monitor.
And you can do that with some apps. It's really slow and laggy and horrible.
Yeah, apps always.
Paid $10 for that.
Oh, you bought that?
I bought that.
I'm sorry.
You bought that?
I bought that.
You ain't getting that money back either.
I thought, hey, that's cool. I'll do that. And then, oh, it changes everything to basic, so you lose your arrow, you lose everything. Mm-hmm. It's really slow and laggy.
Yeah. No, I'm saying, like, to be integrated where you really cannot tell the difference between an extended monitor and your iPad.
Yeah.
You know, it would be very helpful for people that use like Photoshop and stuff. Just put all your tools, you know.
Put all your tools on an iPad and have that sitting there, or on your phone and have it sitting there, and just like, oh, I want to select this tool, and then you can actually manipulate things with a mouse, or grab your iPad and a stylus and specifically work on one area where you can actually draw, or you know, integrate your Wacom tablet to your iPad and sign something. Just to
or if you're playing WoW.
Yeah.
You know.
That
no.
There needs to be no cricket sound. The whole thing is, you know, we've been talking about it the whole time. Apps do this, apps do that, apps do this. Why can't these companies see this and see that this is obviously a
they have bits
a
and
trend,
pieces.
They and they and start pieces. They start to scratch the surface just a little bit, and then they just, you know, no, that's it, that's dumb. You know, I don't know if it's a money thing for them. If they lose money doing this, I would think that they would make more, because if you buy our devices, guess what? You get a completely unified user experience across the board.
Exactly, and that's one thing that'll eventually come, but I think there's so many companies right now, there's some companies that just don't get it. Microsoft, they're not on the tablet game. And that's one of the big things that comes with the unified experiences.
Yeah.
You have your desktop, and I think there'll always be a desktop computing. I don't think that'll ever completely go away. Yeah. It never should, because that's your workhorse.
Yeah.
And then you have all of your tertiary devices that you use. I carry my tablet around, or I carry my phone around. And if one of those, you know, if they can all just talk to each other. But, you know, with Microsoft not in the tablet game, they're the ones pushing a lot of the syncing and the cloud-based services and those kind of things.
Their whole marketing strategy is to the cloud, yet they have the worst possible interface of executing it of, you know.
And maybe Windows 8.
The three, that's what goes back to an article I wrote a couple weeks ago. You know, I pray to God that Windows 8 has a tablet version, which Microsoft seems to not really care about, but, you know.
But until all the players get in the game and then they get competitive on that,
yeah.
I don't think it'll really happen. And maybe with HP coming into the game and actually becoming competitive with it, that it'll push Apple to do it, and it'll push Microsoft to, I don't know, maybe they'll get in the tablet game and they'll actually do something with it.
Yeah, if you're listening, HP, then
HP,
really work on it.
Work on it. Make it good. Make it good.
Make it awesome and make it something that we all want to enjoy, because we want to enjoy this type of unification, I guess.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think that I love WebOS. I love the core concept of it. It's just that, you know, can they execute it? So do it, HP. You can do it.
I want to be able to buy a tablet and, you know, install whichever operating system I want. You know,
wait for a Windows 8 tablet.
I would like to be able to install, for example, Ubuntu with their new interface, Unity. It actually looks, you know, pretty good. It's, you know, it looks very easy to work with, you know, and why not? That's my question.
It's lock in.
Yeah.
Lock in a consumer. I mean, that's why I'm locked into the Apple device that I have, because I got an iPhone and I didn't use iTunes before that, and then I started using iTunes, and all this content out here, I'll just buy this. It's so much easier than having to go here and here and here and all these places.
Yeah.
And now I have so much content that I've purchased through iTunes that I'm locked in. I can transfer my music to something else now, because they removed DRM on that, but they're movies. I've got movies and TV series and everything else, and I can't get away from that.
Zune, like you started with iTunes. I bought a Zune. I was one of 8 people, that bought a Zune when they first came out.
Big Brown.
And exactly. And I, I've always used, I never liked iTunes even before the Zune was released. I never liked iTunes, and it's like the same thing that you're saying there. It's like, you know, you get accustomed to just using the same thing over and over and over and over and over again. You know, like speaking of kind of like what you're talking about. choosing your own operating system for a tablet, well, why not have a, you've got an iPad, Chris, why not, you know, you want to talk about the continuous client, why not have my HP Pre 3 be able to continuous client with that? That will never happen.
Yeah.
Ever.
Because it's lock-in.
But why not, you know?
Proprietary devices.
Yeah.
But I don't think it'll really come to be unless somebody does it individually, which maybe the group that we're in will actually do that, or we push somebody to actually start it and really roll it out, because Apple never rolls anything out completely because they can sell you that added feature the next year.
Right.
With iterative updates.
Yeah, another thing that I wanted to bring up was, you know, you're talking about, when I was talking about Apple and HP and Microsoft, all these companies doing that, the problem with that is, and that's why it's exciting that you're in this, you know, kind of coalition, is if they all start kind of developing their own way to connect devices, they're all going to have their own protocols, and it's going to be like, okay, well, this app, you know, is continuous client enabled for Apple devices only.
Mm-hmm.
And if they want to span across different marketplaces, are they going to have to use different protocols, different ways?
We're going
to
be the IEEE of continuous clients.
I hope so. I hope that y'all are the standards organization. Like, no, this is how
the standards board.
Yeah. You guys figure out a way to become.
Paul will appreciate that.
Yeah.
And like the two people in your cat that listen to this.
Yes.
Exactly.
The standards board. And then the power goes out and we all burn alive in your apartment.
Well, you guys gotta hammer that. Y'all gotta hammer that early, because you know, with different companies, obviously there's gonna be different ways to do things and different protocols and different execution. And if it's all different, then whichever is the biggest moneymaker, iOS, Android, those are gonna be, you know, what app developers are gonna be able to build apps that are continuous client and, you know, enabled. But if they have to change their standards, it's just going to be too much of a mess. So, yeah.
Yeah.
That was a good hour.
That's a very good hour. So me being my first time.
How did you like it?
I enjoyed it.
Well, I'm glad you enjoyed it.
Hopefully next time we'll have more material prepared. And
yeah, you didn't.
Just won't call me just an hour.
Do you have anything to add, Heisen?
No, this covered pretty much a lot of stuff. I want our next podcast to be more also in general technology and not much too much about phones.
You know. Then Apple needs to stop coming out with so many newsy things.
Yeah, it is true. I mean,
and everybody's blog and podcast always like, we want to be general technology, we want to be the and it always goes back to mobile stuff, because everybody's doing mobile stuff and
it's
like,
push,
oh,
now.
There's not like, oh, there's new. Whole new PC out, and
have
it's
seen the
just
new
weird
thing?
And different. Yeah, it's like, no.
No, it's true. You know, the news is not about desktops and just PCs in general. It does not happen as often as stuff happens about.
Talk about Space Camp next week.
Space Camp.
Space Camp.
Most definitely.
The we will try to get these up every Saturday, I guess, from now on. I mean, we didn't know at first how we were going to do this, and if there's a slow week, we're not going to force news. You know, we just won't do a podcast. We'll just do a really big, bi-weekly. But for right now, we're going to try to make it a weekly thing.
Yeah. Every Saturday.
We didn't ramble on.
Heisen's got poker on Friday, so
yeah, he's got high stakes poker.
Pocket aces.
So I guess until next week, guys. This has been the Failed Attempt at Podcasting. I'm Josh.
I'm Chris.
And I'm Heisen.
And we will go see you guys next week.
Bye. Thank you.